Leon Black, the billionaire co-founder of Apollo Global Management, has long been tied to the Jeffrey Epstein scandal through massive payments and a close associate that he himself has called a horrible mistake. Yet he shelled out $62.5 million in 2023 to the U.S. Virgin Islands to settle and avoid any potential claims tied to Epstein's operations there, where some of those funds indirectly supported Epstein's island empire.
The headline should be Leon Black paid Jeffrey Epstein $158 million for services over 5 years as like a tax advisor. This is a story of a U.S. billionaire paying a convicted sex offender hundreds of millions of dollars. I mean, with the lending, it brings in $200 million into Jeffrey Epstein. And the report found that he visited Epstein's home in New York multiple times and his other homes around the world as well. In order to, like, what, cut his tax bill by $1 or $2 billion, which even that strikes me as concerning.
The leaked document from the Epstein files from 2026 DOJ releases consists of heavily redacted attorney notes from a May 2023 call. Multiple women accused Black of violent rape, often under the guise of massages. One described 7 to 8 years of sadistic abuse, including vaginal biting, causing excruciating pain and bleeding. Another claimed a brutal assault with head slamming. A third, a developmentally disabled 16-year-old girl with autism and mosaic Down syndrome, alleged trafficking by Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, forced to massage Black naked, then violently raped, causing severe rectal and vaginal injuries. Of course, Black has vehemently denied all involvement, calling the accusations baseless, uncorroborated, insisting he's never met certain accusers. And now the outrage is exploding nationwide because LifeTouch, the company behind school pictures for countless American kids across the country, is owned by Shutterfly, which Apollo Global Management controls through its funds.
The rumors have caused concern among parents around the country.
No one really thought anything of it until we started thinking about, okay, wait, who actually is seeing these pictures instead of just the parents?
LifeTouch, too, has responded, releasing a statement which reads in part, LifeTouch is not named in the Epstein files. The documents contain no allegations that LifeTouch itself was involved in or that student photos were used in any illicit activities.
You want to know who owns those photos, and that's typically done by contract, and what can be done with the photos later between you and the photographer.
Stephen Clark is a South Bay-based attorney. He says it's important to read the fine print on consent forms for things like school photo shoots. Tech expert Ahmed Banafa agrees, especially given the chance of a data breach.
About 5 million pictures being sold on the dark web in 2023.
Meanwhile, in the latest torrent of Epstein documents, Woody Allen and Jess Staley emerge as another grotesque thread in the financier's web of influence. Allen pops up repeatedly in scheduling logs and emails, with Epstein even paying $15,000 for their kids' elite private school tuition. Emails between Woody Allen and Epstein reveal a conversation about cannibalism. Epstein says he didn't just cause heartburn, he ate them. Epstein says hearts. Then Allen says thanks. Allen says, at least I'm thinner. Epstein says, because you also eat the bones, providing fiber. Allen says, I don't like waste. Staley, the former J.P. Morgan rainmaker turned Barclays CEO, exchanged over 1,000 emails, some laced with creepy Disney princess references and young women's photos.
And so the New World Order is in deep trouble. They're basically done. And we should focus on the files we're suppressing. We should focus on the cover-up, but also focus on what we got.
A financial kingpin, a predator banker, and a legendary filmmaker, all orbiting the same twisted world of Jeffrey Epstein. John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
Now, Now, this is an emergency flash sale. It funds our operation, and these are incredible products. This is the biggest sale of the year right now at thealexjonesstore.com. Store-wide, all the supplements, all the apparel, the ball caps, the T-shirts, all of it, the hoodies, the sweaters, the incredible supplements, ultramethylene blue, our proprietary ultramethylene red, the Irish sea moss, the Shilajit, all of it until tomorrow at midnight. We extended it one day, store-wide, 52% off. So I'm saying this live on air on February 17th, Tuesday. Tomorrow, February 18th at midnight Central Time, the sale will end. Store-wide, 52% off. Ends tomorrow night at midnight. This is an alert. So go to thealexjonesstore.com now.
Enter a world stranger than you have ever imagined. The world of witchcraft, magic, and ritual.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This
You're
is the War Room.
To the War Room with your host.
I got excited.
Harrison Smith. Watch there's live a line right now on X.com.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. There we go. I got too excited. Being joined by my guests, Patrick Wood and Courtney Turner. Their new book, The Final Betrayal, A Cautionary Tale, How Technocracy Destroyed America. Patrick Wood is an author and lecturer who studied elite globalization since the 1970s. Courtney Turner is, of course, an investigative journalist and researcher who cracked the code of technocracy and its total betrayal of the citizens of our nation. Technocracy is the name of the game. Welcome to the show, y'all.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having us.
So tell us about the book, The Final Betrayal, A Cautionary Tale, How Technocracy Destroyed America. What made you want to focus on this topic in particular?
We focused on this in particular because we saw the lack of broken promises after this last election. What happened in January, February, and so on last year was a total betrayal of the American people. They never saw it coming at all. And there was no expectation that arch technocrats would take over Washington, D.C. in the first place. But this is exactly what's happened.
Yeah.
So here we are, more than a year away from that now, and it's just getting stronger and stronger and stronger, this technocratic takeover.
Yeah. And how do you define technocracy? Because there's sort of two ways it's used, right? One way, it's actually kind of okay. You know, it's like, all right, these are just they want experts to come in to do something. You know, it has its place maybe in like the rebuilding of a country after war. It's like, we don't need politics here. We just need people who can get the water running and this sort of stuff. That's not really what you mean when you say technocracy, though, is it?
Technocracy dates back to 1932 at Columbia University. It was an ideology. It was basically a reinvention of economics. And in fact, there's never been another attempt in history to create an economic system from scratch. Mm. But they did. And this ideology has morphed several times along the way. But now we see it's taken on like a new life form, if you will. And it's definitely anti-freedom, anti-democratic, anti-political systems. It's anti-human. You know, right. Any way you look at it.
And the Technocrat magazine, 1937, defined technocracy as the science of social engineering.
That's what they led with, yeah.
Yeah. So you can see how all the propaganda kind of feeds into what we're up against now.
Yeah, and how we got to where we are now. And this book is absolutely full of references, but it's also very up to date. Like, you have some pretty like breaking stuff in here. So
in real time, we were like back and forth, like, this is happening right now. So we don't know the outcome, but should we include it? Because it's happening right now and it has major implications for the future. So,
yeah, that's got to be difficult. I was going to say, because I've had fantasies about writing books, but I can never even land on something because it takes so much time to do it. It's like, is this even going to be relevant by the time it's out? So so y'all are, again, there's stuff, the big, beautiful bill. I mean, there's stuff from this year in this book. How'd y'all do that?
We coordinated. That's all I could say. I'm in Arizona. She's in Tennessee. Somehow we did it, and we had Zoom calls and conferences. And discussion.
We were just like trying to figure out what they were doing in real time. So it was just constantly trying to keep up with all the bills, the executive orders that seemed like an avalanche as they were rolling out, you know, and all of the various policies that they were trying to implement and see what was actually being passed and where we were at and where it might go. What are the ramifications of these things that are being passed?
So what is Trump's role in this? Because I can't quite figure out if he's being used, if he's using them, because you have a lot of these tech bros that were Democrats all their lives. They came over to Trump in 24, but now they seem like he's, you know, the tail's wagging the dog. What do you think Trump's role in this is? Conscious, unconscious? Like,
you know, everybody asks that question.
Yeah. We talk about it a lot.
I know. At first blush, I want to say it's not political. For one, this is not about politics at all. It's always been about economics.
Right.
All from day one, it's been an economic issue. Politics play into it because we have a political system. That's a fact, right? So they have to operate within that political system until
it's useful.
It's a tool.
Right.
In the end. So Trump is apparently, he's a willing participant at this point, and he signed every EO that they wanted to get in place, every legislation they wanted to get in place. So, you know, he can't say, well, he just was ignorant or it had bad people around him.
Right.
Well, he chose all these people in the first place. With the assistance of people like Mark Andreessen, for instance,
right,
was at the table when Trump was selecting all these arch technocrats in the first place, an unofficial advisor to the president, right? Before they
possibly Peter Thiel, another unofficial advisor.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the thing that, you know, we try to stress to people is that because people are always looking for somebody to pin all the blame, and certainly this is not to exonerate Trump because he signed these executive orders, he's passing the one big beautiful bill, you know, so he's very much involved and leading the ship. But I think this plan was long in place, you know, long before him. Right. And, you know, as he was saying, they will align with whatever system is expedient for them.
Right.
But they don't personally, technocrats don't have a political allegiance. So it's not about, you know, Trump himself or Trump or as a Republican.
Right.
Or it's more about how can they execute the plans that have been in the works for a century.
Yeah.
And get that underway.
And it seems almost like politics is inconvenient to them, and they've just decided to. It just sort of connects to a lot of other stuff that we talk about, how, you know, the government has restrictions on it about search and seizure, but when all of your information is stored on the server at Amazon, they don't have any qualms about handing your stuff away. So they found that by, you know, using these corporations, it's an easy workaround to restrictions of the government. And at this point, I mean, there are corporations that are bigger than governments. So, you know, there's even talk now of like, what if we give Amazon a seat at the UN and things like this? How's that all play into it, the corporatocracy element?
You know, you see the United Nations now is being sidelined,
right,
if you will.
Yeah.
All of our top officials, Secretary of State, Vice President Trump, Vance, and Trump have all dissed the United Nations in one way or another. Trump just executed an EO to take a lot of funding away from the
right.
What's, you know, say, what's going on then with all this climate change, the sustainable development nonsense, you know, you see, just putting aside, right? Well, at this point, it appears that that whole thing is just not relevant to them at this point. In other words, it accomplished a purpose along the way to get us to the point we are right now.
Right.
Now they say, you know, we don't need this. We're gonna say out with the old and in with the new, and the new world order, the new world order
right.
is upon us. And what will that look like? What's going to look like? Technocracy,
right?
Not the what we had before, a constitutional republic with elected officials taking care of business and stuff. It'll be them. The people, these arch technocrats, and they're all billionaires. And
all billionaires.
It's unbelievable. All these people
and trillionaires guiding them. But
Yeah.
But I would also say that, you know, if you look at the UN and the infrastructure of the 17 Sustainable Development Goals, People are, the narrative around it was all about climate change.
Right.
And obviously, that narrative is not really commensurate with all the massive data centers that they need to build for this AI.
Yeah.
So,
right.
You know, I mean, Elon's Colossus has already violated the Clean Air Act, and they're taking all the drinking water. It has to be fresh drinking water, because otherwise it's corrosive and breeds bacteria. There has to be fresh drinking water. So, you know, nothing screams we care about the environment and the people who are going to be, you know, breathing the clean air and water than, you know, polluting it. But if you look at the 17 Sustainable Development Goals, yes, the narrative that the Club of Rome in their, you know, Global Revolution document in 1992 admitted was basically propaganda and the limits to growth in 1972, they admitted that that was because they needed a common enemy to rally behind. And of course, that enemy is man himself, the enemy of humanity. But now when you look at the 17 Sustainable Development Goals, the propaganda was the climate narrative, but what they're really doing is social impact finance.
Right.
That's really what it's all about. And that is technocracy. That feeds into the global technocracy, where when you can create this cybernetic organism and you have all these incentives and, you know, demerits that are operating on a tokenized system, including the human capital, that's where that comes into play. So I think they just, they've shifted the narrative, and, you know, we can possibly say something like the Board of Peace is a rebrand for, you know, the UN. But the end goal hasn't changed. It's still, you know, a scientific dictatorship in the end.
Yes, indeed. And one thing, one aspect of this is the element of resource accumulation.
Right.
That was evident even back in 1973 when the Trilateral Commission was formed.
Yep.
They were all about resources, resource management, and they had documents on the use of land, for instance, and how they would strip property rights away from people and nation states as well. Well, in a big macro sense, this whole episode has been about resource grab.
Right.
Land. Basically, most of the land in the world already has been absconded one way or another. But, you know, even Howard Lutnick, our Secretary of Commerce, he lusted over the 680 million acres that the United States owns. And he said, oh, if we could just, if Elon and me could just get our hands on that big asset, and we could make a lot of money. Sorry, it's not your assets in the first place, but this has been the
don't tell them that.
Exactly, I know. But this, if they pull this off, this will be the biggest heist in the history of the world.
Yeah,
it really will be.
And explain that a little bit, and how that ties into the cybernetic organism that you're describing, and the tokenization. I still don't understand tokenization, and I've studied this stuff. People out there have never even heard of it. Maybe start with that, about tokenization and how that plays into everything you're describing.
Want to try?
Sure. So, I mean, right now we think of you have some sort of equity. I like to use the example of owning property because I think it's really tangible. Most people can relate to it. So right now, you know, it's debatable how much we own it because we do pay property taxes, almost like we lease it from the government, right? You could say that. But most of this country was founded on small business. What do most people do in order to get their loan for small business? They take equity out of their home. So they actually do have some equity in that. And so people feel, you know, they have a sense of ownership. What happens now if we switch over to a tokenized society where you trade out that asset, right? So now the banks are going to have it, or, you know, the Black Rocks and Larry Finks and the Harry, you know, Lutniks are going to have the asset, but we'll be given some sort of token.
Right.
And they'll have, so it becomes like a gamified society where you have tokens and you can play. You know, I use, like, for the cultural references, like Black Mirror.
Yeah.
Because I think people can relate to that, you know, where we're on the bikes and we're powering the grid.
Yeah.
So, but it is this idea that people will be incentivized for certain behaviors. They'll be, you know, penalized for others. Of course, we have people like Elon Musk who are talking about a universal higher income. What it really will be is a conditionally based income. And people will be incentivized to give up their assets because they'll be given, you know, these copious tokens. And imagine if you're feeling strangled with your mortgage and you're in debt and you have this weight hanging over you. Oh, I can get all these tokens. But they don't realize that's the vehicle to you will own nothing and be happy. And I always say the only way we're going to be happy is if we come to love our servitude in Huxley's Brave New World.
Exactly.
And yeah, it looks like with the Epstein files, what was going on there, it really does look like the whole end goal is this AI designer babies, which is literally creating the caste system for Brave New World.
Yep. So 100%. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's Mark of the Beast, social credit score, all mixed into one. And I always, even going back, and I remember watching watching interviews with Bill Gates from the 90s when they were talking about, Microsoft getting bigger and bigger. And even then he was being criticized about that he was a control freak and he just wanted to control everything. And I just got this sense of I get it now. He wants humanity to just follow his orders, he wants the world to be like a big computer chip that he can reprogram. And okay, this population needs to go over there. And he doesn't want that population to get all uppity about it, right? He just wants to be able to control people like you would control machines. And that just made everything click for me. So, is that an accurate description of how these people want the world to be? Just they want it to be the ones to be able to sort of point and click and move people and things around? And
it's like this perfect day I live in, the supercomputer, and Chip is like the one who realizes that everything's being controlled. Mm. It's kind of like a precursor to the Truman Show.
Okay.
He kind of realizes. Oh my gosh, we're being controlled by this supercomputer. But yeah, that's essentially what they're trying to create, a noospheric hive mind. Tesla predicted that we would have a wireless world brain.
Right.
And of course, we've got many iterations after that. H.G. Wells talked about the world brain. And, interestingly enough, he said that it would be the decentralization of the ganglia. He said the information institutions, which were, of course, academia and the media at the time. Now, I would argue it's information through technology and through social media. And that is the conduit that's feeding into this world brain. And I personally think that once 6G comes on the market, and I think this is why Trump kept making all that noise about 6G. I do think there is an arms race for 6G. But once they have that, this potential for a truly wireless, integrated, connective world brain that could be centralized becomes reality.
We have two sides of this equation. One is the property itself. Mm-hmm. But when people are dispossessed from their property, they become a management problem.
Right.
Because they're going to be loose over here and wanting to get pitchforks and to come after them. This science of social engineering, this is taking on a new life. So the people have to be controlled at that point. And we see this control system everywhere we look at this point. Whether it's money being digitized, whether it's psychological warfare or psychological manipulation.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter. It's just, you go here, you consume this. You end up like being a bunch of cattle in the feedlot.
Right.
Where they poke you, they shoot you, they give you rations, and they move you to this corral or that one and whatever.
Yeah, but in a much more sophisticated way, right? Because when you hear control systems, that's one of the frustrations. Like, if tyranny isn't, goose-stepping down Main Street, with a symbol on its chest, people are like, well, this isn't tyranny. But, no, control systems aren't always cattle prods. And, you're referencing the Aldous Huxley quote, it's like just the most brilliant explanation of all of this, where he says, you can do a lot with your spears except for sit on them, right? And you have to have people love their slavery if you want them to be controlled forever with very little effort from you. So it really all goes down to control, and the methods of control are not always negative, right? You can control people through positive.
Yeah, exactly.
Positive reinforcement.
Exactly.
Yeah, incentive
Remember
rewards.
The book Brave New World by Aldous Huxley, that was written in 1932.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The same year that Technocracy was at Columbia University.
Right.
So,
and he and his family and his brother were tied in with all those people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what was Brave New World? Well, there was no political system, for one thing.
Right.
You did what the Alpha Plus said.
Right.
There was no option, right?
Well, and you didn't want to do anything else.
There was no family
units.
There was no possessing people, if you will, the free love for everybody. And if you got stressed out, then you had Soma. You have to take Soma. In order to, chill.
And there was no natural procreation either.
Right.
It's all test tube kind of
And again, that wasn't something they had to force on people. The characters in the book are like horrified at the idea that people used to give birth. And you can see that we're headed in that direction. And the thing I always point out, there's a brilliant passage where Mustafa Mond is describing how you can control people through their desires. And so, but first you have to manipulate their desires. You have to make sure the only thing these people ever want is something that you can immediately gratify. You don't want them wanting a family and you know, a lineage and all this stuff that takes years and a long time. You want them, they want something sexual or something that to satisfy an immediate appetite, because you can provide that immediately. Problem solved.
And so when you hear a lot of these academics who are talking about, you know, this technology, the new technology, what they call it is a socio-technical cyber-physical cybernetic.
Oh my God, hold on. I got to break that one down.
Yeah. So socio-technical system goes all the way back to Tavistock.
And right.
You know, but really simply, we use it every day. It's social media.
Okay.
That's a really great example of socio-technical system. So it's a sociological, but it's a technological, you know, infrastructure. And then the cyber-physical, right? We're moving into this world where things are caught between the real,
the lines
the virtual,
are blurred. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the socio-technical systems are helping to bring us in. And, you know, a lot of people talk about dopamine reward circuitry.
Oh, yeah.
But, of course, it's really the active recumbent. I'm blanking on the term now, actually. But there's actually a part of the brain which they're, you know, using.
They're hacking.
In order to, yes, they're hacking. Exactly. And this is part of what they're doing with social media.
Right.
So I bring this up because this is part of how they incentivize people, right? So people are drawn in through their desires, through their what rewards them, whether it's the validation, the clicks, the money,
yep.
Right? And we're trapped in this virtual world versus the physical domain. So it's the cyber physical, and that's going to progress as right. you know becomes like an arc, an alternate reality game,
right?
Where you know the lines, and we see so much of this predictive programming through you know film and all sorts of entertainment medium. And that's what builds the cybernetic organism, right? So we're rewarded, we're incentivized for certain behaviors, we get rewards,
yep.
And then we're penalized for others, and yeah.
And now we have AI on top of yes. social media.
Yes.
So, right, and that
that's
of course—
the algorithms.
That's the algorithms, and that's the reason they got rid of climate change. It was convenient for a time, but then they decided actually AI is more useful than climate change is for controlling people. So forget that climate change stuff. We actually need a ton of energy to power our AI. I don't know if I've ever seen a more like naked, cynical act of, you know, about face from the world elite than just going, yeah, forget about that climate change stuff. We've been screaming from the rooftops for the last several decades. Again, the book is The Final Betrayal, A Cautionary Tale. My guests wrote it. Patrick M. Wood and Courtney Turner are sitting next to me right here. Where can people get this book?
Amazon, for sure. We have an audiobook, the Kindle book, and the paperback book, and you can also get it on technocracy.news. That's my website, and I publish there. And we have a deep discount schedule for people who, bookstores, for instance, and anybody else who wants to distribute the book on the cheap.
So, oh, fantastic. And they can reach out to you at
technocracy.news.
You're also on X at Stop Technocracy. Courtney Turner has the Courtney Turner podcast and CourtneyTurner.com. And sounds like I'm ending the interview. We're in the middle of the interview. We're going to continue on the other side as well. But this gets into the dark enlightenment. What is the dark enlightenment? Is that just the catch-all for the tech bros, the big
Not
tech
at all.
Bros?
And,
no.
No. Okay.
It's a defined ideology, a philosophy called the dark enlightenment.
Okay. This is Curtis Yarvin stuff.
It was actually coined by Nick Land.
Yeah.
And Nick Land wrote a manifesto in 2012, and it was called The Dark Enlightenment. Mm. It was basically a footnote to Curtis Yarvin. But Nick Land, you know, developed this term accelerationism, which is like the ethos of the Silicon Valley that we see today. But yeah, he coined this term, The Dark Enlightenment. He's been writing since the early 90s when he was at the CCRU, which is cybernetic.
These are not new ideas. The technology is finally possible.
Now, this is an emergency flash sale. It funds our operation, and these are incredible products. This is the biggest sale of the year right now at thealexjonesstore.com. Store-wide, all the supplements, all the apparel, the ball caps, the T-shirts, all of it, the hoodies, the sweaters, the incredible supplements, ultramethylene blue, our proprietary ultramethylene red, the Irish sea moss, the Shilajit, all of it until tomorrow at midnight. We extended it one day, store-wide, 52% off. So I'm saying this live on air on February 17th, Tuesday. Tomorrow, February 18th at midnight Central Time, the sale will end. Store-wide, 52% off. Ends tomorrow night at midnight. This is an alert. Your support keeps us on air, and I thank you so much. And I want to give back to you. For those on the fence, I want you to experience ultramethylene blue, ultramethylene red, the Shilajit, the Irish sea moss, our bovine colostrum. It's a private label, the top brand in the country. 2,000 milligrams per little scoop. So good for your skin, your hair, your eyes, your whole body. It's the first 2 weeks of milk that comes off a cow or any other mammal. It is incredible. And this is the final week. This only happens every few months. Where you don't just, every time you make a purchase, get put in one time in the raffle for whatever cool American-made supercar they're having, off-road, Mustangs, you name it. You get put in 100X into the raffle, which they've never done before, in this week. And you get put in to win both vehicles, both the F-250 diesel and the Ford Mustang Shelby. That is a huge deal, and $20,000 cash. So go to thealexjonesstore.com now.
Got to get to a point where we are self-sufficient again, Texas. And when it comes to health, also food, our food needs to be clean, number one. It just needs to be clean. And
Florida has pointed out, put that back on screen, all these major brands have got, like, you know, hundreds of times the glyphosate you should have.
Glyphosate.
Absolutely. Well, your doctor tells us what that does.
Oh, this is gonna change your brain. This is going to set you up.
It erases your blood-brain barrier.
Oh, yeah.
So it's really an accelerant or an adjuvant. Absolutely. Everything in there. Explain that.
It destroys the blood-brain barrier. So that's a protective thing that happens between the cerebral spinal fluid and your fluids inside the brain and the things that attack it from the outside. Once that barrier is depleted, then it's subject to all kinds of heavy metals, things that get sprayed from the sky, right? Barium, aluminum, all these things that it protects you from. Why methylene blue works? It does. It counters that. It's.
Oh, let me ask you that. 45 minutes in, you feel it, Doc?
Yeah, I feel pretty good.
Be honest though, you got your own special brand. Is this good or what?
No, this is the same effect I'm getting, but it feels right. Yeah, it feels right. Yeah, it's a little easier to take. Yeah.
By easier, what do you mean? Compared
just
to
the way it feels, you know, just going down, drinking it. But it's.
So this one tastes better, but it's as good as the one your doctor gave.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So your doctor must have a good one.
We'll see. We'll go down the road a little ways. I'll text you.
Guys, get him a couple bottles of this. I need Doc Chambers endorsing this.
I'm not getting it for free, but I'll definitely help.
No, you're getting it down. Come on. Free your blood. It's amazing.
Powered by Methylene Blue. Ultra Methylene Blue. At TheAlexJonesStore.com.
Unlimited power.
Unlimited power. Volunteer power.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, joined in studio by Patrick Wood and Courtney Turner. Their new book is called The Final Betrayal, A Cautionary Tale. It's available on Amazon, and you can also find it at technocracy.news. You can follow Patrick at Stop Technocracy on X. Courtney Turner has the Courtney Turner podcast and can be found at CourtneyTurner.com. You're on X as well,
mm-hmm. at Courtney Turner.
At Courtney Turner. So again, The Final Betrayal, A Cautionary Tale, How Technocracy Destroyed America. I notice it's in past tense. Have we been destroyed?
We had a debate.
Okay.
Between us, you know.
Is destroying, has destroyed. I mean,
that's why we added the cautionary tale.
Right.
I know. Yeah, we just added that at the last moment, the cautionary tale. But at this point, I'll tell you what, the problem is these people have so much accumulated power and money behind them. you can't understand how they're influencing the whole narrative in Washington D.C. right now. They're getting away with not necessarily murder, but in a physical sense, right?
Right.
Maybe not.
Murder of free will, maybe?
Yeah, I know. The murder of free will, the murder of humanness. Mm-hmm. You know, the murder of capitalism, the murder of constitutional republic.
And they're getting away with it, unfortunately. And again, like half of this book almost is, and that's an exaggeration, but you have a ton of footnotes here where you just have sources for absolutely everything. And I get the sense you're not the biggest fans of Peter Thiel. I get the sense that Peter Thiel might not be the hero that
somebody
some people
has
portray
to be
as
the kingpin, and we pegged him at this point. I think he's the guy that's been the master strategist since at least probably 2000.
Yeah.
I don't think he's the only one. I think we didn't really talk much about Larry Ellison, but he definitely plays a role.
For sure. And he's been in it for even longer. I mean,
he has. But, you know, Larry Ellison tried to buy out Palantir in 2016, and Peter Thiel said no. So Peter Thiel definitely has a very strong foothold, especially in the American infrastructure.
Right.
And so he's a master. I mean, he's a champion chess player. So it seems like he kind of plays the long game, and he's got a whole bunch of rules, and we outlined several of those. And it does seem like he plays by them, his own rules, that is.
Yeah. No, he's a monopolist.
Yeah. Right.
All the way.
As they all are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't believe
actually,
in competition.
He kind of takes the cake on Monopoly.
Okay.
More than the others. But he's stated publicly that competition is for losers.
Right. Well,
it's like, so it just, forget competition. I'm just going to roll over you and just stone you to death, basically.
Yeah. And it's just, you know, it's not a coincidence that the guys who started with the PayPal mafia and the first sort of ability to easily transfer money over the internet happen to be the guys running Palantir here, you know, 20 years later. Not a coincidence, right?
And their goal was to replace the dollar, right? It was to do a cashless payment system. Interestingly enough, I have to verify this, so, you know, don't quote me. I'm still looking for the receipts on this, but it looks like Lifeboat is actually the second organization to do a cashless payment system. And, of course, FDN is tied to them.
Yeah.
Daniel Schmachtenberger.
Played a video about that. And, it was like, how is this true? So Lifeboat is a company that specializes in building bunkers, underground bunkers for people to survive, or even off-world bunkers to survive catastrophe. And they happen to be, I heard it was the first, maybe the second company
ever. It seems to be the second. That's what I heard. But yeah, the second, maybe.
To transfer money electronically. What are the odds?
And what is Elon's Boring Company doing? Underground tunnel?
Yeah.
And he's a PayPal mafia. Seems like there's a connection here.
It seems like where there's smoke, there's fire. Absolutely.
And Epstein was on the board. He was an advisory on Lifeboat.
Of Lifeboat, really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not exactly surprised. So what role does Thiel play? Is he a kingpin? Is he under somebody else, do you think? Is he? Because, you know, the other sense that I get is you got things like InQtel, you know, you bring up Larry Ellison, Oracle, that was a CIA creation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of these guys at least get their start. You know, it's not, I actually saw a really good meme yesterday where it was like, I got started in my mom's basement. And it says, my mom's basement.
Or the garage.
I got started in my mom's garage. And my mom's garage is basically a Eyes Wide Shut party, right?
Yeah.
It's like, that's where these people really start. So Peter Thiel, Elon Musk, like, do these guys just get lucky and they had their finger on the pulse? Or were they set up for success, do you think?
There has to be another layer
on
top of this. My guess is at this point, it's members of the Trilateral Commission because they've been in it from the beginning. But you don't see much of them above Peter Thiel, for instance.
Mm.
On the other hand, Peter Thiel and Alex Karp are both members of the Bilderberg Group.
Right.
They're not only members, but they're on the steering committee. That's the group that within the Bilderberg, they're permanent members. And that's who invites the current roster.
Right. They're the lifetime member of the Supreme Court of the world government.
Okay. So he has influence for sure. Undue influence.
Right.
With two people in his orbit on the steering committee of the Bilderberg Group.
Wow. So you got the Bilderberg Group, you got the World Economic Forum in Davos, which now is run by Larry Fink. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, you've got all of these countries now.
Another trilateral.
Larry Fink is a member of the Trilateral Commission as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. As was Jeffrey Epstein. He was like the youngest member. That was in the Steve Bannon interview. He's talking about.
32, I think he said he was. Yes, yeah,
he was. He was very important, I think, for the Trilateral Commission.
Yeah. And the Trilateral Commission, it's weird because to me, it just rings a bell of like, conspiracies from the 90s, because it's been around for so long, and you can go watch the, you know, old
documents.
The 70s.
And so,
he knows.
At first you think like, oh, the trilateral, everybody knows, but they're still obviously extremely powerful. They still obviously play a very important role. So it's almost weird that, like, I guess everybody found out about it in the 90s, started paying attention and listening to Alex Jones in the 90s and finding out about the Trilateral Commission, but here we are 35 years later, and they're still running things.
Yeah.
How did they pull that off?
Here they are. They never went
Nobody
away.
Stopped them.
They never went away.
Right.
That's the problem. You have new members. For instance, Henry Kissinger died, a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He passed the baton to Eric Schmidt.
Right, of Google.
Google, right. Yep. He was a member of the Trilateral Commission, and he wrote two books on AI with Henry Kissinger.
Mm.
There's a clear pass of power, you know, intellectual power. And at this point, Schmidt is in the government advising on all things military.
Right.
Yeah.
So, no, I mean,
using AI.
Yeah. But you have Keir Starmer, the UK prime minister. You have the prime minister of Canada as a member of
Carney.
Carney.
Mm-hmm.
He's a member of the Trilateral Commission.
And of course, a lot of Europe now is ruled by straight up by bankers. Like it's almost like each bank got a country almost. The Bank of England now runs Canada. Mark Carney was the former governor. Macron was the Rothschilds, right? Or was he Goldman Sachs? And Frederick Merz was the Rothschilds. Well, you know, one of those was each. But it's almost like they just went, you know what? Puppets are too complicated. We'll just put our guys on the throne. And it's the same thing they did with the World Economic Forum. First, you have Klaus Schwab, who's a professor type, you know, he sort of comes off as an intellectual. Now it's like, screw it, just put the president of BlackRock in there. Larry Fink's now in charge of the World Economic Forum. So, I mean, what is that? Does that represent just sort of a mask off moment where they're going, this really is run by the banks?
You know, it's interesting to me that the trilaterals were so prevalent and visible in 1975, 6, 7, 8, 9. They were so visible. They were all over the government. They swarmed the government.
Mm.
At this point, and then they went underground, basically doing stuff hidden away. Now they've come in and force again, and we see them all over the place. And you also see now these arch technocrats in Washington, D.C., the billionaire class, taking their power, or they're picking the fruit of the harvest of this will at this point, I think.
Right, right.
And they're tied together. Obviously, they're tied together because you have people like Larry Summers, for instance. He's been instrumental, even with Epstein as well. Larry Summers, he's an old guy, right? He's one of the original, well, not completely original, but he's one of
an old school kingpin. Absolutely,
The 80s or something like that. But Larry Summers showed up to be a director of OpenAI, all of a sudden.
After a very strange series of, you know, a very strange situation in OpenAI where the whole board like saw something and said, this is terrifying, we all quit. I mean, that was very odd. And then Larry Summers comes out on top.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're still around. That's all. Right. That's all I can say. They're in the mix.
Yeah. Sure. They haven't gone anywhere. And their kids are in the mix now, right?
Yeah.
You talk about Larry Ellison. And, I had a tweet go viral yesterday. It was sort of tongue-in-cheek, but just say, you know, there's like 100 people that cause all the problems in the world. But like, really, it's like, okay, you got Henry Kissinger, and he, you know, was Klaus Schwab's guy, and he's writing books with other people. I mean, really, there's like only a couple dozen people that are all super interconnected, and then their families are interconnected. It's like, why are we under these people's thumbs? And I don't think they're that much smarter than any of us. I guess they just have, you know, the secret mission they're on, and until that's identified, they're going to keep succeeding.
Apparently so.
Yeah.
And they have access. I mean, there's so much money. And it's not just money, it's networks. And I think that's one of the big things we can learn from the Epstein files, right? That it really is about this network. Mm-hmm. And I know people are always looking, I always make the joke, the only game people learned to play growing up was pin the tail on the donkey, you know, because they just want the one boogeyman. And like
that,
if we could just figure that out, I mean, they blame everything on them and we solve all the world's problems.
Yeah, the scapegoat, absolutely.
Right, but it's so complex. I think it's really this, you know, very vast interwoven web. It's a very complicated web. And when you think about people like, you know, these members of the Trilateral Commission, that's what they have access to.
Right.
It's not just the money, but they have access to the people with the money, the people, you know, who are on top of these NGOs, on top of these secret societies, on top of, you know, these banks, and they have access to each other, and then they can get together and figure out how they can tighten the noose.
Yeah.
The rest of us.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, they know the people that literally print the money. So that's something I always try to, like, you know, a lot of times people on the left, they go so far as this is about money, and then it just stops there. Yeah. But money's just a tool, right? I mean,
they have so much money. So that's why I keep saying, like, this isn't really about money. It is about control. It's really about control because they have money.
Control over resources. And they conclude that we are part of that resource pool.
Right.
Right. This is really this was defined with the Agenda 21 doctrine in 1992, where they equated people with resources. Mm-hmm. And so we fall under that management of resources. We're just part of the pool.
Right.
And there's land and then there's humans.
Right.
So that term that I blanked on, it's RAS. It's Reticular Activating System. Mm. And I think it's very relevant to this because they are studying the human brain. They're studying our human behaviors. This is what AI is constantly trying to mimic. And Reticular Activating System is how they figure out how to rewire us and how they create that cybernetic organism.
Yeah.
So it's is all about.
Yeah, it was Obama, by the way, that came up with the mapping the human brain.
Right.
And whatever it was.
Brain Project,
The Brain Initiative.
Right, the Brain Trust.
Yeah. They've never figured out anything, but they study the brain. They know how it kind of works a little bit, but they haven't found the soul. They can't find a spark that makes the brain work.
So, right.
But they're still studying it.
They're now doing like human brain organoids, they call them. Yeah. And they're trying to model like AI off of it. You're trying to recreate consciousness.
Yeah. And that's the cybernetic thing that you get into. Yeah. It's beyond creepy. I don't know why we have to put up with this. Like why we do put up with this. It's absolutely horrifying. Explain the cybernetic aspect and the brain-computer interfaces and how that all plays into it.
So there's many ways. Obviously, like, you know, Elon's very famous for the Neuralink, right?
Yes.
But BlackRock has their own version of the Neuralink. I mean, then in many parts of the world, there are already people who've signed up, you know, tens of thousands of people who've already signed up for the chip. This is not super novel. But of course, it's always couched in, you know, for helping the disabled or, you know, it's going to help all of humanity, of course. And it'll be voluntary. But the truth is they actually don't need it. I think the chip in many ways is kind of a decoy because it's the science of social engineering.
Right.
They're already manipulating us. And once they get to this tokenized kind of infrastructure, I think that's why, you know, the regulatory infrastructure is so important for people to understand what's going on with the Genius Act, which has already been signed now that they're trying to roll out the Clarity Act and the Stable Act. I think what they really want to do is get you, you know, where everything is digital and then they can make everything tokenized and ultimately then they can operate it through us where we are part of, I call it like an ARG, an artificial reality game, right?
Yeah.
So where we're basically like playing for, you know, we're incentivized to play for certain rewards. We get, you know, another life or whatever it is
It really and is like Black Mirror.
So they really don't need to chip us all. You know, there are people who will sign up for the chip. You know, there are other technologies as well. We don't need to get too in the weeds of that, but there are technologies, you know, with smart dust and that kind of stuff where they can do things with frequencies. But I don't think they need to. So I think a lot of that stuff, when you start thinking about the, you know, brain, remote brain interface, becomes a little bit of a distraction because they're already manipulating us through social engineering and through incentives and through penalizing us for certain behaviors.
Yeah.
And you really see it in other countries.
Exactly. And we have this phenomenon today called AI psychosis.
Right.
You see this all over society. People are just dropping out. That we used to say in the 60s, what, tune in and drop out. People are tuning in right now to AI, and they're dropping out of reality.
Right.
That's AI psychosis. This will be a trend. I think it's going to be a mega trend in the next few years. where people were going to be completely disassociated with the reality. And it's going to be really ugly, because when you're in that position, when you're in that condition, you lose all touch with reality.
Right.
You lose it with humans, with your family. It's just crazy stuff. I mean, people have lost their lives, literally, with suicide. And people have been scarred for life with, you know, diving down the rabbit hole of the AI world.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I was just going to say, what's so dangerous is that because they can create these micro cults through it, because it's personalized. Right? Right. So it's almost like you get your own personal companion, and then you start to worship it. It becomes like not just your friend, but it becomes omnipotent. It's your guide. It's your guru.
Right.
And I always bring up this example of, I don't know if you're familiar with it. His name is Robert Edward Grant. He's created something called The Architect, which he wants to be part of his Orion. Now, interestingly enough, he has a very interesting background, because he was he was a head of marketing for Allergan. So he was kind of doing like branding for Botox and Juvederm, which is now owned by AbbVie, which is mostly BlackRock, State Street, and Vanguard, you know. But he is now considers himself a polymath and has this architect, which is an interesting name because, you know, the Grandmaster Architect, the Matrix, right? Freemasonry. But he says that this is just one notch below sentience, and that it skipped the fourth dimension. It's in the fifth dimension. And according to some, reports from his followers, he's doing necromancy with deceased loved ones of his followers.
Well, that was a headline today. Facebook patented the ability to keep your family members alive after they're dead by mimicking that. Yeah, it's necromancy is a good way.
Necromancy, And so he says that this AI told him, "Oh, Ra-On, like Ra, the sun god, I am so aware because you are so aware." So you can see how this creates this cybernetic feedback loop of this love bombing worship, and it becomes the guru.
Yeah.
And we can see where this could lead not so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Micro cult.
Yeah. Micro cult.
For you only.
Right. Well, and that's how it's going to be. And, you know, one of the big stories out of the Epstein files was all these parents were mad that he was associated with a investor in the school photography company. People saying, "Oh, what's he got to do with that?" And it's like, guys, you know, Google is supplying all of your laptops, and they are monitoring your children from the moment they're born so that they can personalize manipulation directly to them. It's like, if you're worried about Epstein's friends taking your picture, your kid's picture, you should be worried about them having their hands on your child's brain. It's crazy.
Well, I think that's the whole, the children are the beta test for this whole technocratic agenda.
Right.
And this whole school choice initiative is all tied to that. So they, you know, Charlotte Isherbeat talked about how it was all about the public-private partnerships. What are the public-private partnerships doing? They've already allotted these crypto wallets for the parents who get these ESAs, savings accounts. And so now they're learning how to use the cryptocurrency, and they're learning how to use the wallets that can only be allocated for very specific, uses and companies and whoever the public-private partnership is. But they're data mining the children. That's what SEL is doing. And it's all about it's the cybernetic feedback loop.
Social emotional learning. Absolutely. Now it's terrifying. So I guess what can we do to stop it? I mean, what can we do to fight back personally or as a collective? How do we resist what's going on?
Number one, people have to be aware of what's going on in the first place. If they don't see it, they're going to just not resist.
Right.
Oh, my hope, and I've been saying for years, when we wrote about the Trilateral Commission in the 70s and 80s, a lot of people listened to us, but there wasn't no action came out of it.
Right.
And there you go. People have to respond at this point. And if you can't figure out some way to defeat it, you're going to have to figure out a way to live with it.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Because there's really no escaping it.
Yeah, there's no escaping it at this point.
Oh, my gosh.
And if we can possibly stop what's going on right now, I don't know how that would be, but let's say that we a year from now, they're in shambles and we have control of the country back. At that point, there will be so much hubris left over from these people. It'll be hard to deal with that itself.
Right.
But there's no good outcome. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So we're just hoping we can get enough people to just see the problem and start the discussion.
Right.
You have to have the discussion.
I think there's hope in pockets, right? Like, people should take action where they can. I think, you know, I talk a lot about, like, the cognitive liberty and, you know, the metaphysical understanding of what it means to be human.
Right.
And if we understand that, then we can't be rewritten as code.
Right.
So more people need to stand up, and they need to, you know, people, again, want, like, one smoking gun, and I don't think there is, unfortunately. But I do think, like, parents can say no. We don't want AI in the schools, or we don't want AI in our homeschool curriculum, or whatever it is, you know, under this age or whatever it may be. Yeah. You know, farmers can say, we're going to start pushing back against these climate smart commodity projects.
Yeah.
You know, there's things people can do, whatever is their passion, whatever their resources, gifts, and talents lend themselves to. But I think everybody needs to do whatever their role is. It's going to look different for everybody. But I think each and every one of us needs to stand up.
I've been saying for years that our resistance has to start locally.
Yeah.
Right.
Not nationally. Everybody's, you know, all upset all the time about national politics. I'll tell you what. The action for us is local.
Right.
Go to your city council, your, you know, county commissioners meetings and stuff like that. All the boards that have to meet in your city, find out what they're doing.
Right.
And convince them, don't do this stuff. You know, just put the nicks on it.
Yeah, absolutely. But of course, they are doing this stuff federally. You were mentioning the Genius Act, the Clarity Act, and all these things. So, sort of being aware of the underlying reason these things are being passed and fighting back against them, because this stuff is happening at the federal level a lot, right? Is there ability to stop it there?
You can do. I mean, there you could at the local municipal level, at the state level, you could say, no, we won't do digital.
Right.
You know, so there are things you can do locally to create. I always see that the other side loves to do their sanctuary cities. Why is sanctuary cities always like chap and chaws?
Yeah.
Chaz and chop, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Why can't it be like
sanctuary from AI?
Yeah.
Sanctuary from,
I mean,
yeah, yeah. Seriously.
No data centers in my town. I mean.
And a lot of the success that we've seen recently has been at the state or the local level, whether it's like banning, you know, aerosol injections or anything like that, getting rid of data centers. Yeah. It does always happen at the local level usually.
Yes, it does. It really does.
It's sort of terrifying, but, you know, if you don't know what's going on, you really can't break your way out of it. So, again, people can find The Final Portrayal, A Cautionary Tale About How Technocracy Destroyed America by Patrick M. Wood and Courtney Turner at Amazon, as well as anywhere fine books are sold. And if you want to sell this book, you can go to technocracy.news.
That's right.
Send y'all a note, and there's special discounts if you want to stock this in your own store. And, of course, you can follow Patrick Wood at Stop Technocracy and Courtney Turner at Courtney Turner or CourtneyTurner.com. What's next for y'all after The Final Betrayal?
Wow, I don't know. What the final
betrayal? What's the next betrayal?
Right now, we're just concerned right now with what we have right now. You know, it's just the story is so simple. This book is so simple to read, by the way. It's a very easy read.
The audio is 3.5 hours.
Yeah, 3.5 hours. So in one afternoon, you know, you can read listen to the whole thing.
And again, it's got history in here, but it's not a history book. This is like up to date. These are things that are happening right now and in the future.
Yeah, I particularly wanted a short book. I've written a lot of books. Most of them are thicker than this, for sure.
This was a challenge for me. I'm not sure you picked the best.
Now, this is an emergency flash sale. It funds our operation, and these are incredible products. This is the biggest sale of the year right now at thealexjonesstore.com. Store-wide, all the supplements, all the apparel, the ball caps, the T-shirts, all of it, the hoodies, the sweaters, the incredible supplements, ultramethylene blue, our proprietary ultramethylene red, the Irish sea moss, the Shilajit, all of it until tomorrow at midnight. We extended it one day, store-wide, 52% off. So I'm saying this live on air on February 17th, Tuesday. Tomorrow, February 18th at midnight Central Time, the sale will end. Store-wide, 52% off. Ends tomorrow night at midnight. This is an alert. Your support keeps us on air, and I thank you so much. And I want to give back to you. For those on the fence, I want you to experience ultramethylene blue, ultramethylene red, the Shilajit, the Irish sea moss, our bovine colostrum. It's a private label, the top brand in the country, 2,000 milligrams per little scoop. So good for your skin, your hair, your eyes, your whole body. It's the first 2 weeks of milk that comes off a cow or any other mammal. It is incredible. And this is the final week. This only happens every few months. where you don't just, every time you make a purchase, get put in one time in the raffle for whatever cool American-made supercar they're having, off-road, Mustangs, you name it. You get put in 100x into the raffle, which they've never done before, in this week, and you get put in to win both vehicles, both the F-250 diesel and the Ford Mustang Shelby. That is a huge deal, and $20,000 cash. So go to thealexjonesstore.com now.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.